Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Outshine is the number one frozen fruit bar brand in America. And once you try them, it's easy to see why. Their fruit bars and mini fruit pops are made with real fruit or fruit juice using simple ingredients you can pronounce. That means no high fructose corn syrup and no artificial colors or flavors. Outshine bars are gluten-free and even a good source of vitamin C. And the flavor lineup? It's stacked. We're talking strawberry, mango, coconut, watermelon, pineapple, cherry, you name it, there's something for whatever you're craving. You've got classic fruit bars, mini fruit pops, and fruit blends that swirl multiple flavors together. Think pina colada, cherry limeade, and more. Find your new favorite refreshing snack, Outshine, at retailers nationwide.
To infinity and beyond!
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess. But he's pretty sure you're fucked.
That is why you fail.
You can't handle the truth!
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my little friend!
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Say what again! Say what again! I dare you! I double dare you, motherfucker! Say what one more goddamn time!
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
No!
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Podcast, episode 6. Big episode. Ken Jack, Trill Ballins, Jeff Lowe, and we're joined by very special guest host, Robbie Fox, at Robbie Barstool on Twitter. If you just live in the Twitter universe. Robbie, thanks for joining us for this mega podcast.
I'm honored to be on. I hope that me being on episode 6 doesn't make me the Ewok of this.
Ooh. Well, hey,
I love Ewoks. Listen, I love them. We'll get into Star Wars, obviously. I'm a big Star Wars guy. I love Ewoks.
Yeah, nothing wrong. I have no problem with Wicket.
Nobody loves
great.
Ewoks like I love Ewoks.
Ken Jack's definitely the Ewok because he's hairy and he doesn't ever fucking wear a proper shirt.
Guilty as charged.
He just always wears a cutoff or a sleeveless tee.
It's fucking hot in New York, asshole. Not all of us get central air.
Hey, it's hot over here.
Hey, I'm sweating
hey,
here.
Hey, I'm sweating here.
No, hey, I'm flatlining. That's the line, right?
I'm flatlining.
So a little different today. We're not going to get into news, partly because we want to get to the good shit. We're talking flatliners and Star Wars The Last Jedi trailer. So we're going to skip news. I was actually going to talk about Rob Schneider tweeting about Morgan Freeman being dead, but I'm just going to move past that. That was a strange part of the day. Morgan Freeman's alive, folks, so everything's okay.
Morgan Freeman Twitter dies more than anyone.
Yeah, he does.
It's like him and Lil Wayne.
Lil Wayne's a quarterly thing. It's like somebody at Twitter does that every quarter just to get like the trending topics up or something like that.
You think Lil Wayne just keeps flatlining?
He does. Now I'm thinking of Lil Wayne writing a song about flatlining.
Flatliners. First off, spoilers, we don't care.
If anyone in the world cares about spoilers for this movie...
You reviewed it, Robbie, on Barstool, and you put a spoiler kind of midsection. Lots of props on that because, man, I don't give a shit. I really don't care.
I try because you'll get the people like, come on, I was going to go see that. And it's like, no, you shouldn't.
The main character technically dies like 10 minutes into the movie.
That's true. So let's give scores. Actually, quick recap of the movie. Basically, Ellen Page's character, they want to flatline. They want to basically...
I'm flatlining over here!
They want to learn what life is kind of after death, and they get superpower kind of things, or it comes back to haunt them and shit, and one of them dies really quickly. Ellen Page is
so horrible. It's so horrible. Everything then, about this movie, the superpowers, the concept is okay. The trailer, I was like actually intrigued. Holy shit.
On a scale of 0 to 100, I gave it a 9. Robbie, what would you give it? I don't know if you made a 0 to 100 score yet, but
I'm so bad at making these because like I don't know what makes a 12 better than an 11 or whatever. But on my review, I said 1.3 out of 10. So we'll just curve that to your score, and I'm giving it a 13 out of 100.
That's pretty bad. Is that second lowest?
That's like the lowest I've ever scored a movie, I think.
True, you gave it a 15, right?
I gave it a 15. I was a little more generous. It still was a very horrible movie. Actually, the funny part about this movie is the first time I'd ever heard of flatliners or the concept of flatlining was from pop star Never Stop Stopping or Never Stop Never Stop Stopping with Bill Hader's character. And you know, the joke was that like his new obsession was flatlining, and the whole riff was playing off the 1990 movie. But Bill Hader would have, like, a Bill Hader flatliner comedy movie would have made a better movie than this movie. It sucked.
It wouldn't shock me if Sony had got the idea to revive Flatliners because one of their executives was watching Popstar and went, oh, you know what? Let's do that. Because I'm going to run through Sony's movies quick just from this year before we get into breaking this down. Sony's movies for this year. They've had some good ones. I'm not going to mention them. That's probably unfair, but sorry. Underworld Blood Wars, Resident Evil The Final Chapter, Rough Night, Smurfs The Lost Village, The Emoji Movie, The Dark Tower, Flatliners, and Jumanji. So Sony, they did it again, folks. Another real stinker. And this one is boring. It's dumb. This movie sucks ass.
So I wanted to see this movie when the reviews initially came out because I'm a fan of seeing bad movies, and everyone is like, this is just absolutely horrid. So then when I saw it had a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes, like late Friday afternoon, I was like, this is a must see. I'm seeing it right now. On my way home from work, she's like, hey, I'm going to the movies tonight with my fiance. Would you like to come? And I said, what are you guys going to see? She's like, this new movie, Flatliner. She looks great. I was like, I will meet you there. This movie was so bad. We were in the theater. It was a sold-out theater, opening night, like packed to the gills. There were so many moments in it where the theater was laughing out loud at like the most serious moments of the movie. The introductions for each character were so horrible and misleading. Like it opens up with Diego Luna and Nina Dobrev like arguing, and you're like, these people are super unlikable. Then Ellen Page just recruits two people she barely knows, and she's like, all right, I'm going to kill myself. Just like, make sure you get me back, all right? She doesn't know him. She kills herself 10 minutes into the movie. No reason to even care about her at that point. Like, if she died, everyone would just be like, oh, all right. Like, that was an idiot, I guess. It was just so bad. Like, shockingly bad. I was laughing out loud so often at, like, this is a horrible... The dialogue reminded me of something out of the original 90210. Where it was like, this was in 2017.
It was like a Sega... You guys are too young for this, but Sega CD used to have these full-motion video games. It felt like Night Trap or like one of those Sega CD full motion video games where like it's just super awkward acting and dialogue. And to Robbie's point, there are people who didn't know this movie was bad that went to this movie because they thought it looked good. At least we knew it was bad going in, especially Ken Jack, who wanted to see it. You know, we knew it was bad going in, but these people were just completely blindsided. They were flatlined. By the awfulness of this movie is just unbelievable.
The characters are horrible.
Everyone.
Not even just like unlikable as a character, but like even look, Diego Luna's mullet, James Norton, the Jamie character, like that guy, bullshit, he's in med school. No way. He's an idiot. There's no way he's in med school. When you don't believe anything, that's an issue because when you have a movie like this, you got to suspend, you know, belief a little bit. But when you don't believe it beyond that point, that's when it gets into the loopy territory. And that's really what it was. It was nonsense.
And I was ready to suspend my disbelief until one moment when Ellen Page flatlines and she comes back. And then the next day she's like Spider-Man, where she's just like answering questions. Like it was so ridiculous. The teacher was asking all these med school questions that she did not know the answers to. And since she flatlined, she knows the answer to everyone, like intricate is that she could cure. And I was like, Nikki Six flatlined. He came back and he wrote Kickstart My Heart. He did not become a genius. I was like, this movie is just.
It has no basis in real life.
It doesn't.
She also is really great at the piano, too. That was the other thing. She just.
It unlocked a part of her brain that she had. You know, like she had practiced piano twice and forgotten about it. But somehow when she was playing piano, she was really good at it. Now she's really good. And then Kiefer Sutherland makes it's like a sly, it's not even a cameo. He's credited. I don't know what it is, but he was in the 1990 Flatliners as the main character. And he comes back and plays the doctor. And I was doing research on this movie, and originally, when he said he was jumping on board for it, he was going to play his original character, but it became this doctor character. How much you want to bet Kiefer Sutherland read this script and was like, oh, hell no, I'm not. No, no, no. I want this paycheck, but you can't tarnish the 1990 version.
So what happened is he's a different character in terms of the name, but apparently he is the same character because this was billed as a sequel. But if you watch this after the first one, it's not a sequel at all. Like, it doesn't play up that way. However, Kiefer Sutherland said, "I play a professor at the medical university. It is never stated, but it will probably be very clearly understood that I'm the same character I was in the original Flatliners, but that I have changed my name and I've done some things to move on from those experiments."
So why is he surprised by Ellen Page pointing out these complex diagnoses? Shouldn't he know that these issues, like, he shouldn't be surprised by it? I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense. I'm flatlining.
I think the beginning, they try to make it some sort of sci-fi type movie.
Yes.
But then in the middle, and I think you wrote this in your blog, it just all of a sudden turns into how many jump scares can we fit in the entire fucking movie? Because there are so many jump scares that at some point, you're just numb to it. It's not even, you expect it. Honestly, if there wasn't a jump scare, I'd have been more jumped by that. Because you just expect a jump scare every 2 seconds at that point.
They have that one scene with Ellen Page where after she flatlines, she kind of sees her shower curtain is going back forth, and then she sees a face come out of it, which is like clearly a horror movie scene. And then they go back to the sci-fi stuff. They go back to the kids living it up after they're flatlining like they're on drugs. And then all of a sudden, like, bukkake of jump scares. And the final third of the movie is just like, you cannot go a page in the script without like jump scare, jump scare, jump scare. And like you said, eventually you're numb to it and you're just like, yeah, these are not scary anymore. Every 2 seconds there's a big clanging noise.
It basically becomes The Ring.
Yeah, you
start adding in like these creepy, like the Jamie character or James Norton's character. Was his name Jamie? They didn't go too far for that one. No. I like to imagine that when characters play characters with their same name, they just can't really remember other names all that well. And they just give up on the script and it's like, oh, fuck it. Your name's Jamie now.
The natural reaction of like, hey, Jamie. And then they actually turn around.
It's like, damn, I'm a good director. That was a good idea. But, you know, he's haunted by the vision of somebody from his past. And then, you know, people have creepy faces and they're standing just in the middle of the street in a creepy way. It just becomes this like typical 2004, 2005 horror movie in between, you know, seeing Ellen Page do cocaine and fucking start making out with people. And that party scene was so weird.
The party scene is weird. What is up with every subplot in this movie? Like the subplot with Jamie and the character that was like kind of stupid in the beginning, or she like thought she was stupid, whatever, they fuck. And it's the weirdest thing. She brings him home after they flatline. They have sex and the mom's like knocking on the door, like, stop having sex in my house. They don't. And then Jamie just comes out and he's like, nice to meet you, ma'am. Shakes her hand with the same hand that he's been doing gross stuff with her daughter. And then he just leaves. It was the most unnecessary scene I've ever seen.
And her mom is just straight pulling a Forrest Gump outside the door.
Yeah.
Just listening to the whole thing happening.
I would like to mention this. I have two favorite lines in this movie that are both said by Diego Luna. The first of which is after Nina Dobrev flatlines and almost dies. You know, they couldn't bring her back for a little bit, and it spooked the whole group. This girl, I forget, what's that character's name? Do you have it pulled up?
Michelle. Marlo?
Marlo.
I think that's Nina Dobrev, but the other one is Marlo now.
Nothing matters.
So Marlo comes up and she sees the group and she's like, fuck it, I want you to flatline me. And they're just like, you know, this girl almost died doing it, but okay. And Diego Luna takes issue and he says, you think this makes you better? This makes you dead.
Like, nailed it.
So hard, because I was like, I mean, he's got a point. Touche. This quite literally makes you dead. And the other line is there's some sexual tension between him and Nina the whole movie. They finally bang. And then afterward, they're laying there naked on his couch. And she says a line that's very realistic, very awkward. You know, they work together. She says, I hope this doesn't become awkward now. He has this creepy voice and he goes, too late. What the fuck, dude? Play cool. Act like you've been there once.
The sex scene was, it was the most awkward sex scene too, because it basically, there were close-ups of faces for the most part. Like, you didn't see, like, anything. And not that this was a movie you could see anything, but, like, you could tactfully put a cover-up over something. But this was just, like, straight up going. It was like a FaceTime chat between two people having sex. And it was super weird. It was just bad.
The one thing that is really weird to me in the whole movie, and it plays into the jump scare bit, too, of why the jump scares don't work, is the hallucinations. Because it's not very clear at first, at least. Maybe that's by design to throw you off. It's not really clear if they're hallucinations or if they're actual, like, otherworldly beings or aliens or, like, demons. Because there's points where things physically happen to them. And if they are hallucinations, which they end up saying they are, then the hallucination wouldn't, like, drag her down a hallway. You know, it wouldn't...
And push her off a balcony, killing her.
Yeah, or kill her, yes. Because Ellen Page, as we said earlier, dies midway through this movie. Physical things happen to her. Or, and this is one of the best scenes, Jamie's character, I believe, it was Jamie's, right? He gets stabbed in the hand.
The hand.
Yeah.
And then not only that, the second he gets stabbed in the hand, it flashes to the next scene and they're in like a diner or a restaurant eating together.
You're confused. And the only thing you know is because he has a bandage over his hand.
If they're hallucinations, how? Like what? What stabbed him?
Sense. The people that made this movie didn't know the answer to this question.
It's like they tried to take it in two different directions because they know if it's hallucinations, who gives a shit? Like, you're not going to be like, nothing in a jump scare is going to scare you if you know it's all fake, but they need to have some sort of consequences. So they made some of it real. That was the main thing. And kind of the point of half the end of the movie, because the hallucinations is what drives them. It made no sense.
And Nina Dobre's character has like hallucinations that are something out of Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
These are like crazy dreams of Jellyfish Boy where she changed the medical records of this guy, right? That she like gave the wrong medicine to. He got stung by a jellyfish in the face. He looked like a Sour Patch Kid, disgusting face. And then she changes his medicine. He dies because she mixed the wrong things. She's haunted by him. Everything involving this jellyfish guy, just dreadful.
The culmination of that, though, is she has to go confess that she basically forged these documents to the dean of the medical school. And when she does that, it cuts over to a scene with Diego Luna. And he's like, hey, what happened? And she's like, I'm on probation now. It's like, no, like, that's malpractice. Like, he would have called the cops. Like, nothing happened to you. Like, nothing really bad actually happened to any of these characters in this movie, except for Ellen Page. And they all ends the movie with, like, them just being fine in a bar, like, cheersing. Even though, like, one of their colleagues died in probably the most effed up way possible. And you got to spend the rest of your life wondering if these hallucinations will ever come back to haunt you, which I would. I'd be like, they're gone for now, but I could be 35 and they could come back.
The hallucination for Ellen Page, correct me if I'm wrong, she was like the least effed up one.
By far. She was like the only one that didn't really do anything wrong. So
it was an accident.
It was a car accident. Was she like texting and driving? Was that, did they make a point of that?
If that happened, I missed it.
On a hamburger phone. Get it?
I think
it's like Juno.
With the, nice.
Yeah, it's a little callback.
I think she just, like, oops, got into a car accident and killed her little sister, which is, like, a super sad tragedy that you feel, like, super sympathetic for. Jamie got a girl pregnant and ditched her, so fuck him. Nina Dobre changed these medical records, so fuck her. Diego Luna was a firefighter for some reason. He's like, I stay away from flatlining because I'm a firefighter. And it's like, where's the correlation there? And the other girl sent nude pictures of a girl she went to high school with to everyone at her high school because the other girl was smarter than her. So fuck her. Everyone.
I forgot that was her part. Yeah.
Got a happy ending. What was that happy ending?
The weird thing about her character is that she is a character who sends nude pictures of somebody else around a school and then gets some sort of superpowers. That's exactly what happened in this year's version of the Power Rangers. One of the characters, Naomi Watts' character, sends nude pictures and then ends up gets like cast away and everyone hates her. And then she ends up getting superpowers. So maybe Power Rangers and Flatliners is oddly connected.
Well, that's that Sony thing. Going back to the whole like Spider-Man EDM Tough Mudder email, it's like they're constantly trying to find ways to like take these millennial plot points and just awkwardly inject them into a movie. Like, it's not relatable for me because, you know, well, one, I've never done that. But two, it's just like, it never was a thing when I was in high school. But for folks who have, like, it probably comes off as just being, like, too try-hard.
I think one of the weirdest parts in this movie is when Albert Brooks' character gets in the car crash, and then he has to go to the afterlife to try and fight to go move on to the next stage in the afterlife or get sent back to Earth.
I think I was at the bathroom during that part. Jeff, do you remember that part?
No.
Don't. Robbie?
I was not.
Oh, I mean, that's weird. We don't really remember that. Huh. All right. Yeah.
Wait. But what about the part where Nicolas Cage comes back down to Earth and falls in love with Meg Ryan's character? Did you guys miss that too?
Okay. Hey, Ken, Jack, can you take your headphones off just a second?
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Do you think Ken Jack actually saw the movie?
There's no way he saw this movie.
No, he's a full of shit. He saw Blade Runner.
Okay, let me motion him to put his headphones back on. Hey, Ken Jack, did you actually see the movie? Are you lying to us?
Didn't I just tell you two major plot points?
Those didn't happen in the movie, man.
I read a Wikipedia summary where
Ken Jack, are you lying to us? Are you lying to us, Ken Jack? If you're lying to us, you better tell us now. This is our sixth episode, and we already have somebody not seeing a movie they were supposed to see. This is unbelievable.
All right, I saw Blade Runner.
Come on, man.
You dick.
I regret nothing. It was really good. You guys are fools for seeing it.
The whole weekend, Ken Jack was like, oh, man, screening of Flatliners in 15 minutes. I don't think I'm going to make it, guys. I don't know. But I'll see the one at like 4:30. And then 4:30 rolls around and be like, oh, damn, B-Dubs has a special on Coors Light. I don't know if I'm going to make it. Even last night, he's like, man, the last showing doesn't happen. I get back around then, and he just doesn't see Flatliners.
He was snoozing all weekend.
Yeah, pretty much.
We said it on Real Dump, though, and I was dead serious about it. I honest to God almost asked Trill to film the movie in the theater. You had one person in yours, right?
Yeah, I had one other person who walked in on me like creating a video and talking to myself. So I'm sure it was a super comfortable experience for that young lady.
I was the only one. But Robbie, you said your theater was...
My theater was sold out showing. I wish there was... There's like, it's almost a guilty pleasure of being in a movie theater with like one or two other people. It always makes me laugh because I saw the Kevin Smith movie Tusk.
Justin Long.
Yeah, the second time I saw that in theaters, it was only two people in my theater, both of whom walked out before Justin Long even turned into a walrus.
Oh, no.
If they walked out before that point, I would have loved to see their reactions afterwards. And I saw a Split this year. The M. Night Shyamalan movie, and I was the only one in the whole theater except for someone that worked at the movie theater, and like a complete dick, I spilled my entire bag of popcorn. Looked at me with his like broom and handle like, come on, dude. The only one in this showing, I thought I wasn't going to have to clean this theater, and now I have to clean this theater.
It's like, I don't have a broom. You have the broom.
I was like, I'm sorry, man.
But here's my big question, because we... And I don't think you saw either of these. Did you see Transformers or Emoji Movie, Robbie?
No, I did not.
Well, you should get on that.
Like a sane human being.
We classified neither of those movies as a movie so bad that you kind of need to see it. I'm on the fence about this one. Is this a so bad you need to see it movie? This is mostly for Ken Jack, because he hasn't seen it.
I was on the fence too. I was going back and forth, especially when I was writing my review for Barstool. Like at the end, I usually say, do I recommend you see this movie? It was like, I don't know if it's to the level of so bad it's good, but it's close. It rides the line. Like it made me laugh at multiple times. It made me laugh at how stupid it was afterwards. Like I was laughing to myself writing a review. Like, I can't believe this got greenlit. Like, how did anyone read the script and say, yeah, let's do that?
It's one of those movies that has an interesting concept, and they've tried two movies off of it and couldn't really make a great movie. I hear the 1990 movies better, but this one's just bad because it didn't know what it wanted to be. It didn't know if it wanted to be a sci-fi movie. It didn't know if it wanted to be a horror movie. And like you guys were saying earlier, the characters are some of the most unlikable characters I've ever seen in a movie this year. There is not one person you're rooting for. The closest they come to is Diego Luna, who plays somewhat of a voice of reason character, but even then he's just out of place, and you never really buy his involvement with this flatlining group. There's no real incentive for him to get involved other than the fact that he's romantically involved with Marlo or whatever her name is. So, you know, I just like, it's just bad characterization, bad writing. The thing I really had a point with is I thought the music was awful.
Like, I don't even remember the music, to be honest.
It just stood out as me. It was like some 450-pound dude on a Casio synth in his basement.
Yes. So you know what the music reminded me of? This is such a specific reference, and I forgot to put this in my review. It reminded me of the music from like when Batman Beyond would go to one of the Joker parties, and they were playing electronic music for some reason, and he was like trying to fight through people. I was like, this is Batman Beyond music the whole time. They just ripped this from a cartoon.
it was like, how do I put this? It was like if you got someone with no musical skill and gave them a synthesizer and then asked them to cover the Tron Legacy soundtrack.
It's very accurate.
This movie sucks. I think we may have hit the end of the road here. Do we have any other closing thoughts on this one? Because, I mean, look, it was rated pretty bad, not just by us, but by Rotten Tomatoes. It was teetering the line between a 0 and a 4. And I think right now, first off, one fact about this movie, and really all you need to know, if you go to the Wikipedia page, you can't get a full plot description. You can't see a movie these days that doesn't have a plot description the night the movie comes out. Like when Star Wars comes out, you can see what happens in that whole damn movie while you're sitting in your first showing. And Flatliners it's at a 4% now on Rotten Tomatoes.
My one closing thought on this is the ending is a little open-ended in the sense that they're all at this restaurant or diner or whatever, and there's a guy playing piano and he plays like that Ellen Page song, and they all kind of look at him like, huh, this might be something. And then the movie hits credits. Like, these fucking people gave us a Scooby-Doo ending. Thinking that they were going to get a sequel.
Oh.
That blows my mind that you thought you were going to get a sequel of Flatliners.
I wish instead of the piano, they would have just heard like an audible noise down the hallway somewhere. Someone just yelling, I'm flatlining. And then it just zooms.
I'm flatlining.
All scared.
Hey, I'm flatlining over here. What's it? Was this in Boston? I'm from the Midwest, so I couldn't tell what city this took place in.
I couldn't tell either. I don't think it was in Boston.
I don't know.
Maybe it was because...
You know, it was supposed to be an Ivy League school, and it was coastal, yeah. And Jamie slept on a boat, which, by the way, he is, like, the most stereotypical characterization of, like, a rich preppy kid they could have ever jammed in this movie. He lives on a sailboat. His parents are rich. He wants to become rich off of becoming a neural expert. And, like, that's his whole motivation behind it. And he's dumb. And he eventually changes his character around because he realizes that like bailing on an abortion is actually bad.
So Flatliners, look, go in at your own risk. I don't think we really gave it a suggestion of it's so bad it's good, but none of us rated it above a 20. Mm-mm. Actually, nobody rated it above a 15. So it's pretty abysmal.
And the other thing, one last thought. They insulted my intelligence in this movie when they made a point in the opening scene of the flatlining to be like, you know, if the person is dead for 4 minutes, that's when the brain will go through brain damage. And then the final flatline of the movie, they're like, they find Nina Dobre and they're like, how long's she been out? And they're like, 4 minutes. And then it takes them another 5 minutes to bring her back and she's fine. Like, just don't make that.
Did I imagine something where like they get upset with Ellen Page's character because of the consequences of flatlining? Didn't they kind of like have some gripes about it at one point?
Because her and someone else talked about a bad experience they had when they were in their initial flatline, and they never disclosed that to the rest of the group. So I think it was her and Jamie, and she saw something, and Jamie saw like, you know, his girl was on his bike with him. He looked up at that window and nobody really ever came out and said, whoa, like the last part of that was like a real bad acid trip. They're just like, nah, you should go ahead and kill yourself so you can do good at medical school.
And why did she say that Ellen Page, why did she say her experience was sexual?
Do you remember that line? Yeah, I remember that as well.
It was a throwaway line. Her experience, she was on a bridge and she saw like fireflies. And she comes out of it and they're like, how was it? And she's like, I'm not a virgin anymore.
Starts smoking a cigarette after flatlining.
So Flatliners, it's in the dumps. It wasn't my worst movie of the year, but it was top 10. It's no Bye Bye Man, folks.
Bye Bye Man wasn't like an ambitious release like this one. I felt like this one, again, we're in this period of, it's October now, but this was released in September, maybe a couple weeks ago. August, September, October is like this dead period where they dump off these bad movies to kind of bury them before the fall and winter rolls around. I felt like at some point they thought they may have had a hit on their hands, and then they started making this movie and they're just immediately like, no way this works.
Man, not much more to say. But we want to move on to something that the four of us are very big fans of.
Hey, more like crap liners.
Hey, oh, nailed it. We will break down the Last Jedi trailer.
It's what we're all here for, folks.
What we think happened in that brand new trailer.
Hi, is this the room for the medical experiments? I got the poster and I was just wondering if I'm in the right place. Oh man, I'm so glad you came. Yeah, you're definitely in the right place. All right, sign this paperwork for me real quick, okay? Yeah, no problem. All right, next thing, see that machine over there, that one in the corner?
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm going to hook that up to my arm, and then I'm going to die temporarily, just temporarily. I'm not sure I can do that. I mean, this was a medical experiment. This seems highly illegal. No. It's a medical experiment. I'm going to kill myself temporarily until The Last Jedi comes out. So I'm going to flatline. They released two movies about it. I'm going to flatline for 2 months. And then that way, when I wake up, The Last Jedi will already be out. I don't know if it's safe to be dead for that long. I think that long you just like actually be like actual dead. You're already screwed, man. You're already in this room with all this stolen medical equipment. So okay, I'm just gonna stick this IV in my arm. It's got propofol in it, and you're gonna stand here for 2 months, and then when The Last Jedi comes out, you're just going to wake me up, okay? Okay, I guess. I mean, what's the worst that could happen, honestly? All right, here we go. Oh, this is real bad. I'm out of here, man. I'm gone. Whoa. I'm flatlining. I'm flying. I'm flying with an X-Wing. This is incredible. Wow. Please tune in to the next episode of Lights, Camera, Podcast to figure out what happens to Flatline Steve.
All right, we're back. Lights, Camera, Podcast, joined by special guest Robbie Fox this week. All four of us, pretty large Star Wars fans.
I'm trying to rank you and Robbie. Like, you guys are like 1A and 1B. And Ken Jack already has a poster up. But I would say Ken Jack is 3, and then I'm 4. Like, I'm a big Star Wars fan, but Robbie dressed up like Slave Leia and went to a convention. And Jeff, like, goes to John Williams live shows. So you guys were just straight up in hog heaven last night.
Oh my God.
Don't discredit yourself because everyone has something Star Wars on their screen right now. Robbie and I are both in a shirt. I have stuff behind me. Ken Jack has a poster behind him that he put up mid. Oh, and Robbie has a Star Wars belt. That actually may trump it all.
Hell yeah.
Ken Jack put up a poster mid podcast. And then behind Audible. Trill, he has 6 Funko Pops. All Star. Actually, wait, is there a Dom Toretto in there?
No, there's a Drew Brees in there.
I thought it was Dom Toretto.
And then I got home. I bought it at Toys R Us. I'm like, I might need a Drew Brees Funko Pop. That's kind of cool. I got home and realized that somebody at Toys R Us had stolen his helmet from it. These Funko Pops come with little helmets, and he doesn't have a helmet. It's bull crap.
Oh, damn.
So the trailer released last night. We're recording here on a Tuesday. Released during Monday Night Football. I think we were all pretty anxious. I wasn't nervous, but I was, like, what do we get? Before we get into it, kind of breakdown, where do we think it stands ranked up with all the recent Star Wars trailers? And I mean like the big ones, not any like TV commercials. So Rogue One, Force Awakens. For me, I think it's one tick below the first Force Awakens trailer, and that's only because of the Han Solo moment at the end. Because of the goosebumps I got were insane from that. But really, in the end, this trailer as a whole, I think, was probably the best one.
Oh, it was so good. I put this right below the Monday Night Football trailer for The Force Awakens. John Williams' score for that trailer, for The Force Awakens Monday Night Football trailer, is some of my favorite stuff that man has ever done. And that really, really made me cry. I'm known to cry during trailers and Star Wars movies in general. I can't watch The Force Awakens without crying. I've seen it 100 times. Still, when Han like steps into the cockpit for the first time and looks around and you get that, binary sunset music a little bit. Oh, it gets me every time. This was amazing. I did not cry during this one. I was a big boy. I stepped it up, but this was just everything about it. I was like shocked and I was happy and I was sad and I was got every emotion out of me.
I'm with you guys. I love the trailer. The Force Awakens, when the trailer first dropped, just a combination of not having Star Wars for 10 plus years. And there was something that was like more haunting and chilling about the Force Awakens trailer, just with the music and with Rey's voice and just the curiosity of not knowing who these characters are. I think it piqued a lot more interest. I feel like the Force Awakens for me was like, oh my God, Star Wars is going to come back. And then this one is like, who is Snoke and who is Rey? I need these questions answered now. But it was a phenomenal trailer. Rogue One, third. I mean, good trailer, but it's Rogue One. I mean, people like Rogue One. I like Rogue One, but it's not a mainline Star Wars movie, folks. And there's nothing like that really gets the blood going.
I actually agree with all three of you, believe it or not.
Definitely way higher on the Force Awakens trailer. And it's like Trill was saying, it was more of a absence of knowledge, not knowing what's going on with these characters and having that sort of huge gap between the last film. And I think this, the combination of, like Robbie was saying, the score with a lot of the visuals from that one was awesome. Like when they had, it had like a real crescendo right into Millennium Falcon going into hyperspace and then fading out into the X-Wing battle, which was fucking crazy. That had goosebumps all over the fucking place. Yes. And the first time I watched it, I was tearing up too. This one, it wasn't really that. It was more, I was just sitting here waiting for more, trying to put together pieces. It wasn't necessarily me being like getting the nostalgia and everything rising up.
Let's break it down kind of like by section here. We're not going to go line by line, but we're going to go by section. First up, beginning of the trailer, Kylo standing in some sort of like weapons ship depot. There's a voiceover. It's Snoke. Says, when I found you, I saw raw, untamed power, and then says something else and says it's that this person's something truly special. Kylo, he's leading troopers into a cave on Crait. It's a planet that's kind of way out there. That's the planet that has the red stuff lifting up. Those are like the minerals. It's like a salt planet, and there's red minerals underneath it. He picks up a lightsaber. You can see Praetorian guards in the background, who we'll talk about in a minute because we didn't see any of them in the trailer.
I was shocked.
Yeah, and then Rey ignites her lightsaber. So the big question from the first section, when he says, when I found you, I saw run untamed power, who is Snoke talking to? Because on first viewing, I thought it was Kylo Ren, but now I'm dead convinced he's talking to Rey.
Wow, yeah. I think he is talking to Kylo Ren. I've watched the trailer 1,000 times, maybe. I stayed up till like 4 a.m. last night. I wrote 2,500 words about it, just breaking it down.
It's great, by the way.
I think he's going to be talking to Kylo Ren. Just the way he was so angry, something about this came off, and I'll get to why I think maybe he's angry later when we talk about a Kylo Ren sequence in this trailer, but I think he's pissed off at Kylo Ren, or maybe his voice is just constantly angry. Like, can you imagine Snoke being like, hey, good job, buddy?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, your quarterly review came up, Kylo, and you didn't do half bad.
You know what? You're getting a bonus.
Kylo, are you greeting the customers by saying my pleasure? You know what? So I thought it was Rey initially because I'm always big on like whatever a trailer is telling me, it's all edited together and it's really telling me something else. But now that Robbie says it, I think I'm more in the Kylo Ren camp because I'm trying to think back to like, when did Snoke find Rey? I mean, I know he was like looking for her and something like that, but is that reference like a face-to-face meeting or is that just like when he like discovered her existence in the galaxy? I'm trying to put that timeline together, but it would make more sense because I do think I'm a big believer in the Kylo redemption arc starting in this movie and ending in episode 9. And I'm thinking like, that's kind of the first step in that is Snoke obviously being displeased with Kylo for some reason.
By the way, that there was 2 scenes where you saw Praetorians. If only it wasn't in action or anything, but the scene where Kylo picks up his lightsaber, you see them in the background, and the scene where Snoke is torturing Rey, you also see Praetorians.
Yes. Yeah. Their feet.
Not exactly the same exact thing.
That's what Kenjack likes to see. That's his thing. Yeah.
Give me those feety, sweetie.
Send me the feet trailers.
We've made that joke now maybe 2 or 3 times this podcast.
It always kills, man. It always kills. Once edited together, it's so nice. We did see him, but I thought we were going to see him fight.
Yeah, me too. I was hoping for that as well. As far as the actual speaking sequence with Snoke, I think he's talking to Kylo as well. There's just too much familiarity, I think, for it to be Rey.
Yeah, I am. I'm probably dead wrong then. I just think I read into the misdirection so much, and we'll get into that as we keep going down. So the next section, Luke takes the lightsaber from Rey, which we saw in the teaser that came out over the weekend, which is an awesome moment, seeing him grab that lightsaber with his robotic hand. He says something, Rey says, something inside me has always been there. She goes on how it's woken her up. You see a force tree. You see a bunch of books. And I won't get too inside baseball here, but there's speculation that's the Journal of the Wills. Look it up.
They are the Journal of the Wills.
Yeah, look it up. You can tweet Robbie and I if we want to talk about the Journal of the Wills. So a force tree, Journal of the Wills, that's like really getting into new territory with Star Wars. And then you see Rey training. And my favorite part of the entire trailer, personally, she breaks rocks and you look and the camera pans up and Luke is stunned at her breaking these rocks. And then
homeboy is shook.
He is. Mm. And then he says, I've seen this raw strength only once before. And he talks about how it didn't scare him before. Gotta assume he's probably talking about Kylo Ren, but he does say it does scare me now. Like now it does scare me, meaning she scares him and he kind of like runs away like he's not going to train her, which we kind of heard at Celebration, there was interviews, and Rian Johnson did kind of mention, and so did Daisy Ridley, that Luke wasn't really feeling the training part. You know, he didn't really want to do it. And of course, in the last trailer, you hear time for the Jedi to end. So I'll toss up two things here. Do you really think Luke is not going to train her for much of the movie? Like, is she going to have to train herself? And her fighting style. You're going to read into her fighting style at all? Because the way she holds that lightsaber, she's got a little Obi, little Palpatine. I don't know. There's some ways to read into it. I'm just teeing you up here. I'm not saying it's true.
Little fencing style. Little on point. I'll defer to Robbie. I don't have much to say on this other than that. This is my favorite moment of the trailer. Mark Hamill killed this scene. And it's just in the trailer, like the expression on his face. I think I tweeted that picture like 25 times last night. He just had a grizzled look on his face. And I wanted to tweet a picture of him and then that like Bella Hadid complex shot where she's like, if homeboy comes through in these, he's going to get it. Just apropos of nothing. But yeah, favorite part of the trailer, I'll go to Robbie because, I mean, he's the guest and he is the man on this topic.
This was so awesome. Seeing Rey with that lightsaber, that shot where she comes, you know, an inch away from the rock and just stops herself. And she's starting to, you could see that she's starting to understand how to use a lightsaber. I'm not buying completely into the style. I am still of the mind that Rey is Luke Skywalker's daughter. I think it's the quote unquote obvious thing, but I think it's the right thing to do. If she's relative Obi-Wan, I think that'd be cool. If it was Palpatine, I think that would also be cool. Don't have an issue with that, any of that. But the look on when he says it does now, like he's afraid, is so good. He needs to win an Oscar for this trailer. Like, he should get, for your consideration, Mark Hamill in the trailer for The Last Jedi. He looked so frightened. He was like literally trembling that I was like, all right, this movie is not going to be sunshine and rainbows. Like, this is going to be a dark movie.
Yep. Yeah, I love this scene too, and I think this made me think two things. It makes me think that, one, initially Luke is going to refuse to train her, and then she's going to be like, well, fuck you, I'm not leaving, and that's where all those training sequences are going to sort of derive from. And then he's going to be like, okay, well, if you're just going to stay here, I'm going to train you. And number two, this also makes me think that she is not his daughter, because he doesn't seem like he's actively dissuading her towards this path, which if he was her father, he would be. He's more just like, you know, like hands off, like, I just don't want to be involved at all. And I think if he was this like hardcore about the Jedi are over, I'm not involved in this anymore, keep me out, then he would be like actively telling her, stop, this is suicidal, I don't want you to die because I'm your father.
Let me tee up one more thing. What if, because it's the Force Tree, Journal of the Wills, this is some old Jedi shit. What if Yoda as a Force ghost appears and trains her? Because I imagine that scene happening in the opening night in the theater, and myself and my friends like jumping out of our chairs like the sideline at the slam dunk contest. We have to hold everybody back. That's how I would react if Yoda just shows up and starts training Rey.
I don't know. I think I would like lose control of my bowels and shit myself.
What do you know? The scene that's like,
I'd be able to control anything.
What if that scene where she's walking off into the mist, it's like her getting called to the Force ghosts, and it's like more than just Yoda. It's Yoda and Obi-Wan or something.
That has a lot of Dagobah-like feelings to it. Move on from Luke and Rey to Kylo, because they did the trailer in parts. If you haven't seen it, I don't know. Well, that's weird. But if you haven't seen it, they at this point, if you're listening to this podcast, you've probably seen it.
If you haven't seen it, I'm offended that you're listening to us instead of watching it.
Yeah. Personal offense. Kylo. Kylo smashes his helmet. You see his ship, the Silencer, going in space battles and doing barrel rolls like Star Fox. I mean, he is flying around everywhere, shooting shit up. You hear him say, let the past die, kill it if you have to. Now, I think that's 100% aligned to Rey. You guys can discuss in a second. And then it appears to show him have a chance to blow up a ship that Leia's on, and Leia is using the Force to communicate with him, and he hesitates and he doesn't shoot. Now, if that's really the scene, I hope that's the scene. I hope that's not misdirection, because that's pretty powerful. What do we think? Is he talking to Rey, and is that really him potentially having a chance to kill Leia?
I loved this part of the trailer because it was such good like facial from Adam Driver, and that's why I'm so torn on the him smashing his helmet, because I don't think he's gonna be wearing it for much of this movie. And I loved in The Force Awakens hearing him express his emotion through that mask, and he was such a good actor using just his voice, like reminiscent of like Tom Hardy as Bane, who, you know, you criticize his voice, whatever. I love him in that. I love him in Dunkirk. You can't see his face. But he won't have it in this movie, for a lot of it at least. I think he probably is talking to Rey with that line that you think, Jeff. And I'm going back and forth on whether or not this is misdirection. I don't think it is. And this is what I was talking about when I said I think Snoke was talking to Kylo Ren in the beginning, and I think he was disappointed in him. So I think he got the order from Snoke, go kill Leia. And I think he had that moment of hesitation. I think he fired the shot, but did not kill her. We heard rumors many months ago that, like, Leia might be in a coma for this movie. I remember hearing that maybe a year ago at this point. Like, yeah, maybe a coma. I think he is going to send her into a coma with this shot. And I think Snoke is going to be extremely disappointed that he did not finish the job.
Huh. That's a theory I haven't heard yet.
I like that.
Probably let you talk. That's a pretty good one.
Me too.
Now, if Leia does try to communicate with Kylo using the Force, will this be the first time on screen we've seen Leia harness the Force actively?
I mean, I guess it depends on definition, because she technically kind of talks to Luke
in
Empire. And Jedi, she kind of says he's okay, I guess, at the end. And I think the last one, she kind of communicates a little. She feels Han's death.
Yeah. I meant just like actively, like.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I guess it kind of depends
on how you moment with another character. I'm using the Force now in this immediate.
It's a good point, because the closest would be, if that's what you're kind of going on, the closest would be Luke and Empire.
Because I kind of thought, you know, going into it, like, yeah, he was definitely going to pull the shot off or not, like, just not shoot it, you know, after being communicated to, because, again, Kylo Ren redemption is happening. But what Robbie's saying makes a lot of sense, just because of the fact that, you know, coupling it with, like, Snoke being disappointed, it either has to be that or potentially, like, Snoke pulling a Palpatine and ordering Kylo to kill Rey, and he just doesn't do it at that time. And I don't see that happening because that's too derivative, but you never know. I mean, a lot of people say these movies are derivative.
And I love the line from Kylo where he's saying you have to kill the past to, you know, reach your full potential. I think he's showing signs of self-doubt there. And I think he knows that there is the light in him still. And he's afraid that Leia, that he was afraid that Han could bring it out of him. And now he's afraid that Leia is the only one that could bring it out of him. So I think he's like, I have to, like, kill these people. And then I'll definitely be, you know, fully committed to the dark side. And Snoke kind of felt that he wasn't fully committed in Force Awakens.
I will die on the hill of this being a movie or a trilogy that ends with the gray Jedi down the middle, evil and good, can pull from both sides. I think it's a good point. I think there's some good in him. I could totally see the end of this trilogy of Rey and Kylo. Like, Kylo, as you've mentioned, Cheryl, redemption story, they're both gray Jedi. They both learn how to balance and they have to fight different forces. I don't know. There's a lot packed into this trailer in terms of that, like in terms of exposition and probably misdirection, but kind of throws you there.
I buy into what you guys are saying too. I think it's going to be part of Kylo's redemption arc. I think that a big theme of this movie is going to be him thinking that killing Han was going to be like the one thing that sets him free to be fully evil. And that a lot of the beginning, him realizing that's not what's going to do it. And then Snoke sort of realizing that, and that he has to move on to a different apprentice because he can't reach the level of evil that, or dark side that he has to be. And just him in that, I think slamming the helmet is like a moment of frustration.
So is Rey going to be his new apprentice?
I think that's what the plan's going to be, yeah.
Next one up, we don't have to stand this too long, is a lot of, like, I guess, Star Wars fan service porn. Because you see the Falcon in the salt mines of Crait. Looks awesome.
So
great
cool.
Shot of the Falcon. And it looks like it's being flown by not just Chewie, but a little Porg at its side. The Porg part, I have to admit, I smiled huge. I was very excited when I saw that damn Porg.
Hottest meme of 2017 is that Porg screen.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm all in on Porgs. Absolutely love them. I will kill anyone that says otherwise.
The best one I saw was the Porg doing the Meryl Streep type, like, yell.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that.
That was pretty good.
You see, shortly after that, Poe's new boosted X-Wing, which kind of has like a power boost on the back of it, which is great. And Trill, I have to apologize. We did predictions, and I did not give you credit for seeing Snoke's dreadnought ship. But you actually do briefly see it in the trailer.
Oh, really? I didn't see that.
I didn't see it either.
It's not at a wide angle, though, which I guess kind of makes sense because it's like the size of Manhattan.
Yeah.
Apparently that's what they're fighting over. All these sites that have breakdowns say that's what the ship is fighting over. So maybe supremacy. They're wrong, but I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt there.
Well, I was wrong because I thought we'd see like a expansive shot of it for like a split second. But no, I don't need credit for that. I saw the trailer last night, man. I can die right now. No, wait, so let me see the movie. Let me see the movie and then I can die. Oh, wait, let me see episode 9 and then I can die. Let me see the Dexter Jetster spinoff.
All right, so we like Porgs. I mean, look, you're not going to find Porg haters in the four of us. But next part, we can elaborate on this one before going into the kind of final ending there. Finn versus Phasma might have been the most badass part of that trailer, because the imagery, and this is the part about this movie I'm most excited for, is the imagery and the shots. Because in the first trailer, every shot of Rey like lifting the rocks, the beginning, Ryan Johnson killed it. This movie could suck. It's not going to. But the cinematography is going to be amazing, which I know that's not all on Ryan Johnson, but just the shots he picked and his story, everything looks so good. And that Finn Phasma thing where he picks up the First Order Stormtrooper lightsaber defend thing, I forget what the real name is.
It's like that, a repellent of some sort.
To finally see them fight, just to see Phasma do something other than get the shit kicked out of her.
She looked badass awesome. Too. Like all the light shimmering off of her armor looked kick ass.
Did the first confrontation between Finn and Phasma is going to be a moment for the ages of like Finn being like, whoa, you're not dead. And Phasma being like, I want revenge, bitch. I can't wait to see. And they're fighting over what looks like a massive, massive war zone. There's fire going everywhere, explosions. Like you said, the visuals, and I didn't mention this, but the very first shot of this trailer with Kylo overlooking the manufacturing of like AT-ATs and AT-STs, the lighting, the cinematography, everything, instantly I was like, oh my God, this movie is going to be gorgeous.
It's jarring to see red used so much in a Star Wars movie, like in this trailer and with Krayt, and even with the promotional materials. The theatrical poster came out last night, right? And it just is straight up, it's red and white for the most part. And I think red really lends itself well to just like impressive shots. It showed last night. So, yeah, in conclusion, red, good color, like it.
Yeah, big fan of red. I think it's good. Yeah, I think it lends itself well to, I think, the dark side, too, in general, just with red being their general motif.
And now that you brought up the poster, I'd like to just ask you guys this question, side note. Do we like the new theatrical poster better than the teaser poster?
So I don't. That's tough for me to answer.
I love the subtlety of the teaser poster. But I love the new poster. I think it's great, but like the teaser poster, it's literally the background on my phone. Like, it's one of my favorite posters ever.
When I have this odd connection to the first one, because we were literally at the event when they revealed it. Like, I feel like that might be a reason I have bias.
Are we didn't have in the boat on Drew Struzan, these posters. Like, what's going on with Drew?
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah.
We're just doing straight up pictures now.
I mean, it has the feel of the other ones, but yeah, you're right. I didn't even think about the style.
He did a poster for The Force Awakens, a D23 poster that was awesome. And I actually bought it on eBay because I wasn't at D23 for an absurd amount of money that I don't feel comfortable admitting. And it showed up in half. It was like,
oh no.
So I had to like contact eBay, went to eBay court over it. It was a mess.
Let's get to that last part. Luke says this is not going to go the way you think, which you can kind of assume he talks to Rey, but we're not really sure at all. You see, they've called them ice dogs, but they're on a salt planet, so I'm calling them salt dogs. Just really high sodium.
I was calling them Arctic foxes, so I was completely off.
That sounds better.
I created like the name of an indie band or something.
Finn, he's on the First Order base. That's when he goes behind enemy lines with Rhodes, who again, they don't show. You see, then the money shot for me, other than the Phasma and the rock breaking thing, Snoke. You see, fulfill your destiny, which he says to Rey, which that's one of my three questions in a second, so we'll get to that. You see her being tortured. Then Rey asking for help. This is kind of the hammer scene at the end. She says, I need someone to show me my place in all of this. And then you see Kylo stick out his hand. So the three things here. One, do we think that's the same scene? Is he sticking out his hand to Rey? Two, Snoke, if you look at that scene, he's looking straight up. And then when you see the scene right after that of Rey being tortured, Snoke is clearly there, but he's sitting down. So is maybe Snoke doing something different in that other scene to somebody else? And lastly, Rey, dark side. That was on Twitter a lot last night. Do you really think she would fully go over to the dark side? So those are the kind of three big questions here, not just for the end of the trailer, but the whole thing in general.
So here's the thing with Rey saying, I need somebody to help find my place in all of this. And cut to Kylo Ren reaching out. I have four words about that, okay? Four words. Misdirection.
Boom.
Boom. Okay, so, end the podcast.
You're absolutely right.
I have watched this scene half speed, double speed, any way you could possibly watch it. I get, you know, this close to my computer, this far away. They're from two different scenes. They have to be. The lighting on their face is different. Ray has like nothing going on behind her. Looks very peaceful. I think she's probably watching a sunset with Luke. Kylo Ren has flames falling from the sky in the background of the shot of him. I don't know who in the world he could possibly be reaching out to. Maybe Leia or something. He's helping Leia in that scene, but I do not think it's Rey, at least not after she says that line. Rey to the dark side. I texted Clem about this. Clem is another blogger at Barstool who's a giant Star Wars fan, and this makes me legitimately nervous. I said, like, some people get worried when they're my age, you know, they're 19. People are going off to college, and they're worried about their friends getting in with the wrong groups, getting in with gangs, going down a drug path. I worry about my favorite Star Wars characters going to the dark side. That's just my worry. If she goes to the dark side, I'm not going to be happy. If this movie is left on a cliffhanger like Empire Strikes Back was, where, you know, we don't know what's going on with Han and Carbonite and whatnot. If The Last Jedi, if the credits roll and we don't know if Rey is on the dark side or not, I'm going to have a horrible few years. It's going to be like,
yep.
It's going to be years of my life where I'm going to be 50 and telling my kids like, oh yeah, 2018 and 19, not good years for dad. The Luke line where he says, this is not going to go how you think. I think Rey is going to get a little cocky in her skills, and she's going to say, I'm going to go confront Snoke. And Luke has met Snoke before, and Luke knows the dangers that he brings. So I think that's what that line is all about.
Also, Luke has done that before, yeah, too, where he's gotten cocky and gone off. So that would be some nice, as our friend George Lucas would say, symmetry, poetry.
It's like it rhymes.
It rhymes. Yeah. I mean, those are all really good points. I think the first thing, I think Rey is she's not going full dark side, but I think she might do something to dabble in the dark side a little bit. I think the motivation behind her going to the dark side is all about her family. I mean, Snoke has to throw something out there. Like, he knows who her family is, or he can help her find her family and, you know, you got to work for me or do something like that. Other than that, I don't really see why Rey would go to the dark side. I don't know if she has any other motivation to do that. The shot of Kylo extending his arm to quote unquote Rey, when I first saw it, I was like, oh man, I can't believe that's happening. That was normal brain. Then as I rewatched it and I kind of thought about it, and I thought about what they're trying to do with the trailer in terms of like building up hype, galaxy brain me said that was definitely some other shot mixed with some other shot. I think that what will end up happening, and this is just my, you know, TB conspiracy theory, he's extending his hand to Leia, and he's there to, if she's comatose, he's waking her up and he's trying to save her or something of that nature. So I think it'll have something to do with Leia. So it will kind of be like a Kylo Ren redemption scene, but I don't think that he's extending his hand to Rey. Not quite yet. And that would also take away, I mean, if they teamed up at the end of this movie, that would take away like a major turning point in episode 9, I would have to say. Because I think that would be a big reveal in episode 9, or like finally when that happens.
Do you think that's going to be the choking scene with Snoke? Do you think that's a singular scene, or is that split up?
I don't think that's split up. I think it's a singular scene, but I see him like having her horizontal. That doesn't sound good. I see her having her like this, and then kind of like raising her in the air as he gets more upset with like her unwillingness to submit or something like that. I can see that being from the same scene, just a different, you know, shot of within that same scene.
I don't think Rey has any motivation, like you were saying, to join the dark side. There's nothing really that they can offer her other than her family. And I don't think she would like destroy the universe to find her family. That's kind of like wouldn't make sense. I do not think that Kylo extending his hand is him extending it to Rey necessarily in the capacity that like asking her to join the dark side. I think because of all the destruction in the background, this lent me to think of what I think this plot is going to go like, and it's going to lend back into the Kylo Ren redemption story arc, which is I think that he's going to bring Rey to Snoke, and Snoke's either going to tell Ren to kill her, or he's going to say, all right, I'm going to train Rey instead, and then Kylo is going to either attack or like get dismissed by Snoke, and which I think there's the scene with him looking up choking, I think is him force choking Kylo Ren. And I think that he's going to dismiss him, and that right before he can kill Rey, which is in the torturing scene we were watching, Kylo's going to somehow bust in and get them both to escape. And then the aftermath of that destruction is him holding out his hand to offer to both of them to fight and a common enemy, which lends back to the Grey Jedi, like Jeff was saying.
That's way different.
That's good, but do you think that's happening too fast? I mean, you've still got an entire movie to go. So you have episode 9, which is all just cleanly set up to be one gigantic battle with no major twist before it. I mean, I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just asking questions here.
I think the idea is going to be they're not personally going to either side. It's going to end on showing they're fighting a common enemy. It's like the enemy of my enemy is my friend. They both need him, Snoke, to be destroyed in order to exist. So they're going to agree to do that. Sort of like, I don't know if you guys ever played Halo, but the Arbiter plotline from that.
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah, dude. I don't know if you other, 19 to 30 year olds have played Halo, but it's a small little indie game.
Hey, when Halo Reach beta was out, I was 702 in the world. Shout out.
Ooh, oh, damn.
I think I was kind of 702 in the world. Halo Reach beta.
I think Kylo's kind of going to be like the Arbiter in this sense, where like all the rest of the rebellion is going to hate him, but it's going to be a necessary evil in order to destroy the common enemy.
I do like that.
I like that.
And I think it's very possible too that the end he is still sticking his hand out to Rey. That's just a different scene.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
I'll wrap up with my two thoughts. One, I think my prediction, and we should have said this in the beginning, but there's no spoilers here because we really just don't know. None of us know.
Oh, yeah. We have no idea.
We have no clue. I think he maybe has just burned Kylo Ren parts of Octo where Luke and Rey are. And now somebody is with him and he's holding out his hand to get Luke's lightsaber. And someone's about to place Luke's lightsaber. Wow.
Damn.
Also, I had the prediction. It was, you guys said it on the podcast, it was completely shot in the dark that Luke's lightsaber would be ignited. I made that prediction, but I didn't want it to happen. I want that saved for later. When that green lightsaber ignites, oh my god, I'm gonna lose it.
It's like
I figured that was the case.
You shit your pants like again in the same viewing.
Yeah, like I didn't even know I had that much possible.
The last scene, though, I will say the reason why I was not convinced at first that it was a different scene. The lighting, yes, but her hair. Just, we're breaking down hair on the podcast. Her hair is much different than the rest of the other scenes where her hair is kind of down. Her hair is up like it is in the beginning of the trailer when she is meeting with Luke, which happens at the end of Force Awakens. So I think the hair might be a bit of a sign there.
What if Rey is the one handing the lightsaber to Kylo Ren in exchange for like
some
meeting her family or something like that?
It'd be wild shit.
That would be wild. Why do
good girls always fall for bad guys?
So Kylo, it's an emo Kylo Ren account, man.
Oh,
it's
God.
Like, I got friend zoned. I got friend zoned by Rey.
Yeah.
So the Star Wars trailer, we all liked it. Regardless of theories and what we think is going to happen, we were big fans. Go to Barstool, check out Robbie's reaction. It is pretty fantastic. It's
hilarious.
So authentic, too. I don't know if anyone, left a nice classic comment on there saying that you faked that. That was some authentic shit right there.
It was so real. I almost didn't record my reaction, which I did for like the teaser trailer where I was just hysterically crying and people thought that was funny. But I was like, that was because I was there with the crowd. You could hear them roaring. This one, I wasn't going to do it. And somebody tweeted me and said, man, I wish I could be watching this like with you. I was like, I'll record my reaction so you can be.
I've only ever done one reaction video in my life. That was when LeBron made the decision. And the second he said South Beach, I shut the computer and never did anything with it. So,
oh, dude, I would love that video. Let me ask you guys this question. Did the trailer reveal more than you thought it would, the right amount, or less than you thought it would?
I'll keep it short. I thought it revealed a lot more. I was surprised by it. And I'm not mad at what I saw. I think it was the perfect amount, but I was surprised with what I saw.
Yeah, I'm going to say more. I'm going to go with Jeff. More in the sense that we saw Luke being very opposed to training Rey, and the final shot revealed more, and Rey being choked.
Yeah, I agree. A lot more of, I think, general plot, like key plot points that are going to be in the movie were shown than I thought, especially like fight scenes in the Supremacy where you see it's being invaded and blown up and shit. Like, that's a huge plot point. And for that to be revealed this early, I thought was kind of a little more than I expected.
Yeah, Luke showing doubt to Rey was probably the only real big plot revelation that this gave away, I'd have to say. But people knew that kind of going in. I mean, if you paid attention to the interviews or whatnot. But I'm sure there are people out there who love The Force Awakens, aren't the biggest Star Wars fans, who thought that Rey would just show up and they would train, harmoniously, and Ghost Yoda would show up and they'd all be happy, and then she'd go kick Snoke's ass.
I think that sets up, though, for crazy-ass reveals. Like the more I think about it, like we saw things that I didn't think we'd see. There's actually a point in that trailer I'm like, oh, we're not going to see Snoke. Like, and if we are, it's going to be a quick flash. But now I think it sets up more wild things. Like the Praetorian Guards must be really badass. I'd hope they don't show them at all in any more like extended cuts or international trailer or TV trailer. And I think it sets up the big surprise with some of the Force Ghosts. I'm convinced we're going to get a Force Ghost, and that's going to be the biggest holy shit moment of the movie.
So I have a prediction that we're going to get a cameo from Lando Calrissian.
Oh, really?
I think they saved him, and I think he's going to be in this movie.
I would just love that.
Is he the Ex Machina? Like, just kinda, just dropping supplies off?
Lando, how do you know that name?
I haven't heard that name in 30 years. About how's Han doing?
don't joke about that. Come on.
Well, there's actually rumors. There was a rumor, and I don't think they're going to do it, but there's rumors that there would be a Han funeral of some sort, and that's where Lando would show up. So, I don't know. Maybe he
filming
does.
Before Carrie passed away. So
yeah, don't put too much into that. Again, we don't know anything. We truly don't.
So we got some anticipation for a Force Ghost. I think if Yoda did show up in Force Ghost form, I would be right next to Robbie, shit in my pants, just liquid shit. The other thing is Robbie mentioned briefly, he's glad they didn't show the green lightsaber. I'm still not convinced we'll see the green lightsaber in episode 8. But I still think I'm still on the side that we'll get to see Luke do something pretty badass with the Force. And I always go back, like, this is my huge plot point that I got to mention, like, every single episode, because
I like it.
I'm going to will it into existence. Star Wars Unleashed had a character bring down a Star Destroyer, like, with the Force. Like, I want to see Luke do that, because that's the only way to show to the viewer that he's, like, transcended into just, like, this absolute badass Jedi.
So Star Wars The Last Jedi trailer, please tweet us your thoughts. Tweet all four of us and at Lights, Camera, Pod. Let us know what you think. Any theories? Because I've seen some stuff tweeted at us that I haven't thought of. So
yeah, definitely keep tweeting me. My DMs are always open. And, you know, people will ask for a job or ask for this, that. My DMs have never blown up like they have these past 24 hours. If people just
send
me like 5-paragraph MLA format theories. My favorite people were asking me before the trailer, like, what should I do to prepare? And I just told him, like, make sure you jerk off before so you don't.
Enema in a internet session.
So we'll be right back to the Lights, Camera, Podcast.
You loved him in The Devil Wears Prada. You were captivated by him in Julia and Julia. You were terrified of him in The Lovely Bones. Lights, Camera, Podcast invites you to attend our celebration of the works of Stanley Tucci, November 9th, 2017. Please join us.
All right, we're back, but not for long. Got to wrap up. We hope you like Star Wars because we talked a lot about it, but we think, based on our Twitter reactions yesterday, people did. We had a GIF made by Jimmy D'Onofrio. I had to shout him out. We have Vince McMahon cut in through watching the Star Wars trailer, did some good numbers. Jimmy made our logo, so had to give him a shout out here. He made that gift very quickly.
Very handsome so man. Good. He's a very so handsome guy.
Robbie, at Robbie Barstool, Robbie Fox, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun. We got to talk about one of my life's greatest passions, literally. You know, Star Wars has been this massive thing in my life since as long as I can remember. My brother named his firstborn Luke. It's been a huge thing in my family.
Wow. Forever. Did not know that.
And, you know, also got to talk about one of the worst movies of all time.
Exactly. It was polarizing.
I think that talking about Flatliners before talking about Star Wars is kind of like erotic asphyxiation. You know, we're just putting a bag over our head so we can't breathe and then, you know, fill in the blanks.
Flatlining so that you can watch Star Wars. Literally.
I'm flatlining. and your podcast, From the Top Rope, which is at From the Top, correct?
Yep, at From the Top on Twitter and Instagram. We tweet, you know, old school wrestling videos all the time.
You guys have some great GIFs and videos, that is for sure.
We do. Our social media guy kills it.
So thanks for joining us. Trail Kenjack. Listeners, you got to do one thing before the next podcast, and that's go see Blade Runner 2049. Because we're going to review that next week, and we're also going to talk about, so get ready for this, our favorite movie from each year in the last 10 years. Oh, wow. We're talking about best movies. Because we had a Ken Jack comment. He went after me. I talked about Whiplash. He didn't like Whiplash, so it sparked an idea.
Why didn't he like Whiplash?
Hey, tune in next week. So go see Blade Runner for Robbie Fox, Ken Jack, Trill Ballins. I'm Jeff Lowe. We will talk to you on Sunday for real.
I'm Blade Running.
Tankin is just an ordinary guy with an extraordinary dream.
You see, Sandy, there's a separate afterlife for the brave. It's called Poopopolis, and it's reserved for people who poop themselves so hard that they die.
Well, that sounds like the shit.
This Christmas, watch as a disgruntled accountant gets so constipated that he can't budget.
Oh wow, is that the Gates of St. Duty? Oh, and is that the poop emoji talking to Mr. Hanky the Christmas Poo?
Well, hello, number two.
Get ready to see something that's never been done before in... Shatliners.